Same process, definitely. And in fact, I would say more for this other process that you're talking about. With the cramps, it's going to be a, like a, okay, you're just breathing into it. But yeah, I mean, most pain has an emotional component to it, right? And so this is kind of where that, again, where that spiritual and physical sort of overlap. There is some kind of old emotional memory in that area of pain that has not been resolved. And if you are subconsciously in emotional pain, even somewhere, your posture goes into a holding pattern. It just is. You know, you look at hundreds and hundreds of bodies and you just see people are holding themselves in protective ways to guard the areas that have been hurt, whether they've been emotionally hurt or physically hurt. So you're always guarding your emotional scars and you're always guarding your physical scars.
Hello and welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance, whether you're running an ultramarathon or just living your life. I'm Eric Dieter, your host. I am an ultramarathon runner. And when we trail runners get together, we never know where the conversation might lead. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Tara Bianca. Tara is a returning guest. She was on episode 74. And episode 74, I give a little bit more of an introduction about who she is and a little bit about her breath practice. And I follow her. I'm subscribed to her email list, so I kind of know who she is. So we kind of just jump into this topic of breath work without a whole lot of background introduction. So if you'd like some background, listen to episode 74. She's got great information. And the more you can hear from her, I think the better. But in this episode, we talk a little bit more specifically focused on the health benefits and how breath practice can help pain management and help actually physical healing. And so that's more the focus here. Episode 74, we talk a little bit more specifically about breathing and running. There is running, you know, we talk about running in this podcast. Of course, you know me. I always will bring running into a conversation if I can. So, but this is great information. Hope you enjoy my conversation with Tara Bianca. But I'm on your email list, and so I saw you posted, and I thought it kind of hit. I was like, "Wow, that's really in line with what I wanted." Talking about the fact that people who practice breath work oftentimes focus on the spiritual nature of it and forget the physical.
Yeah.
And I see that, you know, in the spiritual practice, you know, the spiritual, you know, people that I'm around and growing up in church, that there is a big disconnect in the Christian community as well between like, oh, well, the spiritual, you need focus on the spiritual and let your bodies go to hell. And that's been a real dichotomy that I've seen, you know, growing up in the church, is they don't acknowledge the physical part of our existence. So anyway, I was like, I want to talk a little bit about breath work and, you know, and how do you link the two? I mean, because there is often people who tend to lean toward the spiritual, ignore the physical, and, you know, there's probably less of people who lean on the physical. So talk a little bit about your breath work. What is a practice to breath work and health?
Yeah, I mean, I think the point you're making is huge, because I think it speaks to, you know, everyone has their inclinations to certain aspects of life, right? But it really points to our lack of holistic thinking and kind of more circular or global thinking, how we all kind of get on a linear track and then the blinders kind of go on and that's the only thing we're focused on. And everything outside of those parameters sort of gets thrown to the wayside, right? We forget about it. And so I don't just see this happen in breathwork. I see this happen throughout the entire holistic community. So for me too, my more spiritually oriented friends, so maybe like my practitioners who practice, they're more drawn to Reiki and things like this, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're not even touching the body. They're working more on the energies of the body and the frequency of the body. They don't even know they're in a physical body, you know, like they're like grossed out by this thing. Like I've literally heard them say like, ugh, like I can't even stand being in this, you know, like to them, it's like a totally separate world. And so a lot of them actually have physical health issues because they're putting all their focus on this one aspect to the detriment of this other piece, which is just as essential, because unfortunately, whether you want to face it or not, we do live in a physical reality. We have to embody this physical vessel once in a while and be present with it, right?
Right.
So in terms of breath work, how I see that play out, because, so I don't know if you remember, Eric, when I first got my first proper certification in the breath world, it was more of a spiritually oriented practice.
Yes, so I remember that you talked about that the last time we visited.
So we were really focused on the emotional release and the trauma release and bringing up suppressed anger and really digging into those subconscious beliefs, which is a big part of your work as well. Mm-hmm. And it can be very powerful for people. But the thing I was bringing up this week from my community is that the practitioners and the coaches who tend to be drawn to that work just have no interest in the physiological aspects at all, or the anatomy of breathing, or the science of breathing. And why I was saying that I believe that's an issue is because the techniques that we are coaching when we're teaching from that spiritual perspective are in fact the techniques that come with the most precautions and the most contraindications for the physical body. And so when you don't have that full scope, that full education around what you're teaching, I just think it's a little bit negligent and it can lead to problems down the road, because then the people that you're facilitating with or coaching, you're not really giving them that full informed consent to say, this is the full capacity of what this breathing style can do for you, and really investigating their full health history to look for if there's any indicators that say, you know what, I really don't think this breath practice is right for you right now. There's too many things in your health history that are making me think this is going to exacerbate your symptoms rather than getting you that really positive outcome. So that's where I see the issue being. Now, I'm not blaming anybody, and I think there's a time and a place for all these practices, and I don't want to create a war in the breath community or say that one technique is better than the other. You know what it is, Eric, right? Like, we all have this toolbox, and sometimes this tool is everything that I need in this moment in my life, and then maybe 5 years from now, this doesn't serve me at all, and I move on to something else, right? So I really do think there's a full spectrum available to us and that it's going to resonate with different individuals at different places in their journeys. However, once you know more, I believe the onus is on the facilitator and the coach to express that and explain it to the people they're working with and really let them know what they are getting into. Because I know that I've had bad reactions to doing certain types of breath work, and that was under the guidance of people who have been teaching this for decades. And it really left a bad taste in my mouth of like, this is really irresponsible and avoidable, completely avoidable. You know, the information is out there if you want to learn it. And I think it just empowers us. The more knowledge we have, the better coaches we can be. And we can really introduce this work to people even more powerfully, because then they know that they're being held, that they're totally safe, and that they can really trust you to bring them to that place where they can finally heal or transform or release the emotion or whatever it is that they need to do. So that's why that's been coming up for me a lot this week. It's been bothering me because I see this pattern in the breath world, in the breath community, and those more spiritual practices in the breath world are more popular because they're kind of sexy. They're kind of exciting. Like, everyone sees like people just really having these huge awakenings, you know? So it's exciting. People are kind of numbed out and looking for a big transformation in their life. And I think it's great, but it always needs to come with that extra little piece of safety, precaution, and again, like that full informed consent. Let people know what they're getting into.
So that you said informed consent, you said caution, you said, and I'm, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm like, I would never have classified, you know, breath work as being something that you need. I mean, like, we're all familiar with the fast talking guy at the end of the pharmacy, the pharmaceutical commercials, you know, you may go blind, and you said you had experienced some negative things from breathing. So, you know, as one who has kind of, I'm not a serious breathwork person. I know some things that work for me. I never thought of it as being something I needed to be careful with. So what kind of things, that sounds like, for one thing, it sounds like it, if it's used right, it can be super effective. So, I want to dig in and kind of give some people some things of like, what can this do for me? But then, also, what are some of the things that you need to watch out for?
And the way I've been explaining it to people lately is like, breathwork is either this unbelievably powerful tool that can create massive transformation, or it's just a mediocre thing that anyone can do at any time and get a result. But it can't be both at the same time. So we have to decide which one is it. And if it's this one that's powerful, then that comes with responsibility. And that comes with a little bit more education. Mm-hmm. So that's how I've been trying to frame it for people, because I see too much willy-nilly, just like, just try it. You can't hurt yourself with this. You can't, you know? So in my example, for example, I blacked out twice doing a technique that was not well guided. The second time I blacked out from this technique, I hit my head. So there's that issue.
Yes, I was trying to think. One of the famous, who's a famous guy, the cold guy.
Wim Hof.
Yeah, he warns. Do this sitting down. so you could.
Right. So if you do blackout, you're in a safe space. Be on cushions, be on a bed. So yeah, so there's that option. But I'm, you know, a reasonably healthy, young, fit person. So that's like, that just wasn't well guided is what that was, right? That was a poorly guided thing. That won't necessarily happen to everybody. For me personally, I've also had experiences with those types of techniques where I have sparked either so much vasoconstriction and lack of oxygen to my brain that I've had a headache that'll last like 2 days. And I can't be in the light. It's like a migraine, which I don't get migraines, but this particular breath style induced something so excruciating for me where I couldn't have any sound. I couldn't have any light. I was like in a cave for 2 days. So there are things like that. People can be really sensitive to that. So the biggest populations I say have to be careful for these things are pregnancy. It's a no-go. Just don't do it. There's so much unpredictability, especially in your first trimester. Definitely don't bring on any new practices like that that can have such a powerful physiological effect in the body. I think it's just not worth the risk. Cardiovascular issues, definitely it's a no-go, you know, because most of these spiritual styles of breathwork are a hyperventilation technique, which means you're blowing off a lot of CO2. And when you blow off that much CO2, your blood vessels constrict. And so you're actually limiting oxygen to your heart. You're limiting oxygen to your brain. It can be okay transiently, right? You can create an adaptation from that work. But if you're not healthy to begin with, or you have some kind of medical condition that can't sustain that for a half hour or an hour, you could get into a lot of problems. So cardiovascular issues are definitely a no-go for me. Any serious respiratory issues, a history of serious respiratory issues that really just need more functional breathing and breathing re-education. They don't need more dysfunctional breathing. I'm going to say that the spiritual techniques are actually a form of dysfunctional breathing. You wouldn't breathe like that 24/7, right? Mm-hmm. So they are a technique to be done for a short period of time, short duration, occasionally, right? They're not how you should be breathing. And for some people, you should never be breathing that way. I would say elderly and not even chronologically elderly, but biologically elderly. People who are really unfit, really deconditioned, obesity, diabetes, these types of things. I would never put someone into that extreme breathing technique. They really stimulate a sympathetic response in the body. They really drive up, they upregulate the nervous system. And I just think it's so much added stress to a body that's already under duress, right? A person who's dealing with that level of kind of chronic disease that they haven't been able to escape doesn't necessarily need more stress on their nervous system and on their body. I'm trying to think if there's any other big ones. Asthmatics, I wouldn't put asthmatics in that. Asthmatics can really have almost a full recovery doing functional breathing, right? I've had people cure their asthma. You know, so I would say, yeah, any respiratory issue, especially anything that if the bronchi, if the breathing tubes are actually constricting and that's what's causing your symptoms, you don't want to do a technique that's going to cause more constriction, right? You don't want to add to the dysfunction that you already have. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Those are the big populations that I would say, be careful.
Okay. So you kind of then now have touched on the fact that this can be powerful for... you know, for being beneficial. I mean, that's a great example of the power that is there with your breath work. So, what are some of the things, you know, you talk about functional breathing, what does functional breathing mean and how can regular people use it? Also, you know, a lot of people who listen are runners and I've actually, as a runner, have radically changed the way that I breathe when I run Even through life. I mean, just there's a lot that I've done just in some very simple techniques that have highly impacted my life. So what can that do for you?
Yeah. So how I define functional breathing. So instead of talking in terms of techniques, Eric, I really like to think about how are you breathing 24 hours, 7 days a week? Like, what does that look like? So not just how are you breathing for those 15 minutes or 30 minutes of your breath practice. When you come out of your breath practice, then how are you breathing, right? So that's really where I'm focused on with people, is cultivating much more breath awareness throughout their day. Are you breathing in and out through your nose, right? Nasal breathing, especially when we're at rest or doing moderate exercise, is just heads and heels over mouth breathing. There's no competition. There's a lot of research on this for a myriad of reasons. But so nasal breathing, is your breathing quiet? You shouldn't be hearing yourself breathing, right? It shouldn't be laborious. It shouldn't be effortful. It should be coming with ease. Are you able to deepen your breath? How are your biomechanics? So the biomechanics are a huge portion of if you're breathing functionally or not. Are you able to get some expansion through the ribs? Are you able to deepen the breath? Or are you kind of choking yourself with your breath? Is it very shallow? Is it all coming from the neck and the upper chest? And are you able to slow down your breath? Are you able to breathe proportionately with the amount of movement that you are doing during the day? Does your breathing match the effort of the movement, right? So really letting your breath be the thing that leads the movement so that you can be as efficient as possible. You always want your breathing to be matching the metabolic demands of your cells, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, that's why we're breathing, right? We're taking in this oxygen so that we can feed the cells, so that we can feed the mitochondria, so that they can produce energy for us. So if we're not doing that efficiently, we're not producing energy in an efficient way. You know, I think sometimes we just forget why we're even breathing. And that's why people kind of put it to the back burner. They don't think it's important. But it's literally the most important thing that we do. Mm-hmm. You know, we're taking 20,000 or so breaths every day. I mean, especially for athletes, how cool would it be if you could optimize each of those 20,000 breaths, you know, especially for our long distance runners or the triathletes that you're working with? You know, how could that absolutely transform your sport, your performance, your quality of life, your pain tolerance, your ability to recover, your ability to sleep, you know, all those things? How is changing your breathing going to have this trickle up effect into all of these other things that that affect how you're performing in your sport, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that I noticed is that it, the performance of my sport, it enabled me to feel more comfortable as I run. But you talked about breathing during the day. I have found in the last year, I've been much calmer. Just, you know, through, you know, I do breath practice, you know, try to do daily to focus on breath, but to carry that through and to, you know, to breathe actually, you know, slower with and breathing less, but at a slower rate. And that has actually been able to keep myself calm. I mean, things that used to trigger me don't. You know, as much, I mean, that doesn't mean I never get angry, but I don't have the anxiety, that lingering. Well, I've also, you know, done some other things. I quit watching the news because, you know, there seems to be a conspiracy to keep us in a constant state of agitation because it's profitable for the people who do that to you.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I've been watching more and more stories about traditional hunter-gatherer tribes, you know, mm-hmm. and we have a handful of them left, believe it or not. We haven't totally absorbed everybody. I think there's maybe like 100 known groups that are still overwhelmingly in a hunter-gatherer society with a little bit of horticulture as well to support themselves. And when you can get access to them, when the researchers are able to actually communicate, you know, these guys don't have words for anxiety, stress, insomnia. Like, they don't exist, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. not an issue in their world. Like, they're not being bombarded with global information 24 hours a day. They're living in rhythm with the sun, right? They're getting up with the sun. They're outside all day. They're getting all that energy exchange, ionic exchange from the earth, you know? They don't have anything to worry about. They have to get food for the day. That's pretty much it. They're not thinking necessarily a year down the road. Where am I going to be with my life? What am I going to be doing? You know, it's a totally simpler way of being. And so I think it really is that result of this modern society that we're living in. And the breathing is huge. I can't tell you how many clients I have who suffer with chronic anxiety and borderline panic disorder. And it is very much physiologically rooted in the body. This is not a mental disorder. This is something physical happening in the body that is measurable, that is palpable. They can feel the symptoms. You can measure the symptoms, you know, that accelerated heart rate, that very erratic HRV, the breathing rate out of control, even when they're sleeping, you know, no REM sleep, you know, no deep nourishing regenerative sleep, and their bodies are suffering. So when you can take someone like that and just give them this simple practice of breath awareness, okay, when you feel those symptoms, what's happening in your body? How are you breathing? Are you breathing like, no wonder you have anxiety, you know? Or are you unconsciously holding your breath for 2 minutes and not getting any blood flow or oxygen flow anywhere, you know? So just that awareness piece is so big. Even for me, who's been practicing this for a long time and facilitating this for others for a long time, I still can be prone to anxiety, right? I have like the business stressors. I have to deal with my mom, you know, like there's all kinds of things going on. You know, she had a bad fall this month, broke her pelvis. I became like the full-time caretaker overnight. That was, It's been an incredibly stressful month, right? And I've definitely had a few days of just rage and resentment, which is completely unreasonable, but you have to go through the full spectrum of emotions.
Right. Yeah. it's not when things go bad, I mean, the blocking off the emotions and not walking through them and experiencing them is not healthy either. I mean,
there are times
when you really need to, you know, kind of have that feeling of rage and like,
Well, so I've caught myself in it is the point this month a couple times, you know? And so just having the awareness piece, like what you said, Eric, is like, okay, I'm feeling it. It's all in my chest. I feel like I'm having heart palpitations. I know what thoughts are going through my head and they're not nice. You know, what can I do in this moment to get control of the situation and to calm myself down and to use my physiology to shift my thoughts, to use my physiology to shift my emotions, right? So when we breathe in that way of slowing it down, deepening it, trying to get the breath down to 6 breaths per minute, it taps into that nervous system response, right? It gets you out of this mode and it calms you down. And now you have a little bit more space to think clearly, right? And not be so reactive and so enraged.
Right, right. And that you know, has to be a conscious decision.
Yeah.
But, my, you know, I don't know if it's more typical with Ben or just, well, no, it's not necessarily because my sister and I both got it. growing up in the house, my sister and I are like 12 years apart.
Oh, wow.
And so, the, you know, but a lot of the values that we picked up from our parents, just subconsciously, you know, we react to life very similarly, which is very, very much in a non-emotional way, you know, to try to analyze and formulate a logical intellectual response and keep the emotions out of it.
Yeah.
And so we both learn to suppress our emotions very well. So we don't, when things happen, you know, there are things we react to, but in just day to day, we'll go through life suppressing the emotions and kind of tamping them down. Don't feel, you think, you know, and and so, you know, being willing, you know, for me, that was a big transformation to say, oh, those things that I'm feeling and ignoring.
Yes.
I need to allow that to come about. And so, you know, it doesn't have to go on for very long. I mean, it doesn't have to go on for days, but when things go wrong, of going like, yeah, it's okay to be upset about it. It's okay to go, to kind of growl and say, yeah, but I also know that, you know, kind of what you said, it's, you can't stay in that. You can't let those things pile up.
Well, and what you just said is really interesting too, Eric, because this situation is exactly who I would say, outside of any other medical issues going on, you are the perfect candidate for those more spiritual styles of breath work. Someone who has been suppressing emotion for decades and does not know how to let it come to the surface, does not know how to be with it, is very uncomfortable in feeling their body and getting out of their logical, rational mind. That work can really serve that person for sure. Yeah.
Although functional breath work has worked as well, because my transformation came from integrating to my meditation practice, it was, they call it body scan, or it came from Joe Dispenza, his kind of early meditation practice of just sitting down and being aware of what your body's feeling.
Yeah.
And that was transformative for me, because, like we talked about earlier, maybe before I kind of decide where I start the recording. So I don't know if it will be included in included in the podcast, but earlier we were talking about the focusing on the spiritual and ignoring the physical.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way I was raised, and my spiritual discipline was all in intellectual faith, concepts of, but kind of ignoring the emotional part of and how the emotions connect to the body.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my mindset work has been integrating my emotions, my thoughts, and my body to all together. And and functional breathing became, about the same time I got in contact with you, I was kind of exploring how does breath relate to that? Mm-hmm. And, how does that integrate the soul and the body together for health, emotional health, as well as physical health. And so, you're kind of touching on that as well. So the physical part of it is very, very important, and something that we need to be aware of.
Yeah. For sure. So, it's like, people forget that the emotions are housed somewhere, it's not a separate entity. It's a circuitry that's happening within your body, right? Those thoughts they don't necessarily have to be your self-identity, but they're happening. They are being generated in your brain, right? Those emotions are being generated in your body. They are in here somewhere. They don't exist out here, right? So this is such a crucial piece to understand, there's a physical embodiment of thought and feeling. How can I access that? And how can I transform it for the better? Yeah, and I think what you said is everything. The awareness always. Step number one, if you can't be aware of it, you can't make any kind of change with it. You can't even assess if it's helping you or not, So the awareness is a big piece.
Yeah. So in working with your clients, what is your approach to, where if somebody, give a good kind of a starting place of something that, how do you kind of lead your clients into this, awareness of the body and helping them to get the kind of results that they want physically.
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to depend on what they're trying to achieve, right? But I think there's always a similar baseline for pretty much everyone. And my work can be very simple. How are you breathing? Stop right now, wherever you're seated, or even if you're running, what is your breath doing in this moment? Can you even tap into it? Are you breathing in and out through your nose? Do you feel congested at all? Are you having to open your mouth to get air? What's your posture? Is your head leaning forward, or do you feel aligned in your spine? Do you even know what it means to feel quote unquote aligned, right? Where do you feel the breath expanding in your body? Do you feel it in your throat? Do you feel like every time you take a breath, your shoulders have to come up to your ears? Or do you feel like when you take a breath, it really comes deep into your belly? Do you feel like you can get expansion through the rib cage? Do you have any pain right now? Are you in pain? If so, where are you in pain? Can you bring some breath to that area? Does it help to bring breath to that area? Why are you in pain in that area? What are you protecting yourself against? Why are we still guarding this space? Why has it been such a space of chronic pain for so long? What can we do to start to shift it? So it's simple things like that. Where is your tongue in your mouth? We talk a lot about things like oral posture in my class, because tongue position also has a lot of neurological connections, but it also helps to stabilize the airway and keep the airway open, right? So we talk a lot about things like that. There's so much going on. There's, as you said, with your mindfulness meditation, you kind of do a body scan. And so with the breathing, it's no different. You just invite in that question of, okay, well, as I'm scanning through, what's happening with my breath, right? You just bring in that breath component, really, from head to toe. And I think so my background has been as a body worker for a long time too. So always this postural component and this ability to move. Wherever you're stuck, there's no breath there. There's no oxygen coming there. There's no blood flow coming there. We have to change it. How are we going to change it? And more importantly, why is it stuck? And so inviting in these questions, what am I protecting myself against? How long has this pain been here? Things like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you talk about breathing into pain. So what does that feel like when you breathe into pain?
Well, I mean, I
get cramps occasionally. You know, some of the things that I do, I'll you know, have a body part cramp, and so that's
when you're pain. Running or just in general.
Both. I mean, it usually when I'm running, yes, it happens when you run. I mean, that's a runner's kind of, you get past, you know, 30 miles or so and the muscles tend to cramp. Well, I actually had a time when I wasn't getting enough water. I stubbed my toe and fell somebody told me that there's a electrical component to your muscles.
Sure.
And so as long as I was moving, it was fine, but there was a sudden impact that jolted me and I fell. My entire lower body cramped.
Wow.
I mean, and I was laying on the ground in the trail and couldn't move because like my legs from my heels up to, you know, about the middle of my back was cramping.
Yeah.
And I'm laying there going like, what am I going to do? I can't even bend my legs to get up.
well, how did you get out of that situation?
I just laid there until the cramps got enough that I could move. But then I was then, you know, after your muscle cramps and you're still trying to turn, it took a while to break that loose. And of course, people said, drink salt. You're not drinking enough water, take salt. And so I've learned that cramping tends to is more of a circuitry problem than it is a chemical problem in your body. Mm-hmm. Sure. It's a feedback from your muscles to your spinal cord. Yeah. I probably wasn't drinking enough water either, but you know, those are the kinds of things I've since had cramps when I was stretching or something like that, you know, after a run the next day when I'm trying to do my stretches. Sometimes things will cramp, and so I've tried to practice breathing into that. So that's a long way of asking the question: how can breathing help those kinds of pains?
Yeah, well, I mean, think about what happens when you're in pain, right, Eric? There's a constriction, right? It's a full body constriction. Think about what it felt like to be on the ground, unable to move. There's an immobilization. There's something that feels like paralysis. All the muscles have constricted. You can't move, you're guarded, you're scared, right? Your nervous system is going into a major stress response. If you're in pain, there's no way, you're already breathing shallowly, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're not getting enough oxygen into the body, but more importantly, you're not getting enough oxygen to the cells that need it, right? And you're cutting off blood flow. So this is a bad, 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 right? Like nothing beneficial is happening right now. We've cut off blood flow, we've cut off oxygen flow. We have this interruption in the electrical circuitry, right? There's this, again, this ionic kind of disruption in the body. And we're physically, mentally, emotionally constricted and in defense mode. So what does breathing do? It taps into all of those things, right? It starts to slowly unfold and reverse all of those things. Number one, the fastest, is it taps into the nervous system. So if I can slow down my breath in those moments of extreme stress, extreme pain, I am sending a signal. I'm consciously choosing to send a signal to my nervous system that overrides what my body is doing right now. I'm telling my brain, this is okay. We're safe. It's a sunny day. People are on this trail. Someone's going to find me. Someone can help me. I'm not dying. There's no blood. My heart seems to be in good condition, right? You start to go through it and you start to send that signal of, okay, this is not the worst catastrophe. I'm safe. Right? Your breath sends that signal because of how your diaphragm interacts with your vagus nerve and your nervous system. If you can slow down your breath and deepen it, you start to activate more of that parasympathetic response, which is your rest and digest or your safety nervous system, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we're feeling safer. Now, if you can continue to breathe that way, you can also start to drive more blood flow to those areas that have been like this, right? Vasoconstriction, no blood is getting there. And if no blood is getting there, no oxygen is getting there. And if no oxygen is getting there, those cells can't produce energy, right? So now you're starting to get a little bit more vasodilation. Maybe we're getting a little bit more blood flow to those areas. You're bringing oxygen. Now maybe the cells can start to operate a little bit more appropriately. The hydration is a big deal though, right? Mm-hmm. So now the one thing that breathing did not solve is the hydration issue. So if you are dehydrated, there is going to have to be that electrolyte component at some point for sure. But the breathing will get you 75% of the way there, I think, to just bring you back into your body, send a message of safety, and get you moving at least slowly again until you can get some water in you.
Yeah. And hydration is, especially for a runners on hot day, if you get behind in your hydration, that's a very bad thing for those of you.
And you learned it the hard way. Yeah.
And it's difficult to catch up. I mean, a lot of ultra marathon runners, they've had, you know, their races end because, you know, they get dehydrated and you can't catch up while you're continuing to run. And that's a big deal. And I've got other episodes. Some of the people have talked about their hydration plan, you know, their fueling plan for.
Wow. Yeah, I believe it.
So, okay. Pain other than cramps. So you how does it the same kind of process?
Same process, definitely. And in fact, I would say more for this other process that you're talking about. With the cramps, it's going to be okay, you're just breathing into it. But yeah, I mean, most pain has an emotional component to it, right? And so this is kind of where that, again, where that spiritual and physical sort of overlap. There is some kind of old emotional memory in that area of pain that has not been resolved. And if you are subconsciously in emotional pain, even somewhere, your posture goes into a holding pattern. It just is. You know, you look at hundreds and hundreds of bodies and you just see people are holding themselves in protective ways to guard the areas that have been hurt, whether they've been emotionally hurt or physically hurt. So you're always guarding your emotional scars and you're always guarding your physical scars.
So an injury is still a trauma physically. I mean, it's a physical trauma as well as an emotional trauma.
Definitely.
And so there's a dual component to those injuries. And so the recovery needs to have an emotional, spiritual
dynamic as well. Can act as the bridge, right? As you're saying. So the breath kind of hits both of those components. It's working on that physical aspect and it's working on the emotional aspect. Now, is breathing going to cure everything? Maybe, maybe not. You know, it kind of depends on the person. Sometimes this is the point of having all these tools in your toolbox. Sometimes someone might do a breathing technique and they're completely cured, right? And so now that's the person that goes out and says dogmatically, just do this breathing technique. It cured my blah, 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 you know? Uh-huh. And that's right. How these things get started and they blow up. Now, and it might for someone, breathing might be enough because it might be so different than anything they've ever done for their nervous system, for their physical tissue, for their emotional health, that it could just be a massive awakening. And then some people who have, you know, tried everything in the world to heal themselves and nothing's working, the breathing is just an automatic, like it has to work. It is literally wired into you. You'll get some result from it. No, nothing ever got worse from making your breathing more functional. It's impossible, right? Mm-hmm. you're going to get some benefit. It might not be everything that you need in a moment of real critical injury, but it will get you started, right? It'll get your nervous system in the right place where you can start to invite in more healing.
Yes, that's interesting. Well, one of the quote that I've always heard, I've often heard, is that if the only tool in your toolbox is a hammer, you approach everything looks like a nail. It's like, just use a hammer on it.
Like, yes, right.
I was reminded of My Big Fat Greek Wedding. The dad is like, oh, Windex. Use Windex to put, he put it on his, you know, everything was solved by spraying it with Windex. So yours is kind of the same thing that you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that that I have kind of pursued for a long time is this idea. I call it expectation. I mean, the Christian, they call it faith, you know, Christianity, they say and that was a big component of Jesus's healing. It's like, he says, your faith has made you well. And, I've seen that what you expect emotionally and that tends to manifest, it tends to come about in your mind. So you're saying that about, you know, that there are people who've tried everything else and they come into breathing with an expectation of being able to get some results is a big component of the breath work.
Well, and I would also say the opposite, actually. I would say someone who's never tried breathing and hasn't ever even thought about it and tries it for the first time also has a good propensity to get a good effect, even if they're not expecting anything, just because it's so different than what they maybe have tried in the past. But I think, so you're saying faith, I actually think of the placebo effect as similar to faith, right?
Well, yes, it's the same thing. It's an expectation that what you're doing, and it's... I've done some studies on the what they used to call relics in the Catholic Church. So the each church had relics of the saints, and it was a placebo. It was it was an object that there was a belief there that you could have some, and that's we've talked about, I think you've read Dr. Joe Dispenza's book on the placebo. He calls it, you are the placebo. Right. And, you can get negative. They get negative effects from the placebo as well, just because
of the placebo effect.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to ask is how much of that component of belief? I mean, you said the breath work is effective even without belief, but, kind of give a little comparison between what's the physiological what can you expect from either?
Yeah. I mean, so for me, it's again, you are breathing all day, every day from the moment you come into this world until the moment you leave. It is your one true companion that is with you every second of your life. It never leaves you. So it's like, how could it not be important? It is built into every other system of the body. So to me, you're going to get some effect. Does it have to be earth shattering? No. But if you just practice a functional breathing technique, you will feel something, right? And some people will feel a lot. And some people, it will change their whole life. And so I don't think you can really put a percentage on it. I will say this. I do think the fact that there are not more lawsuits in the breath world from not being able to articulate that there are precautions and contraindications to certain techniques, I think that is a lot to do with the placebo effect. I think the placebo effect keeps people safe in a situation where maybe they weren't fully informed about what they're getting involved with. I do.
Okay.
Because the practice that I was really engaged in was so spiritually oriented, and there was so much ritual around it, and the crystals everywhere, and the intentions being set, and really like setting the tone for the room. And I think that ambiance holds a sense of safety for everyone, that even if maybe someone was pregnant or had a cardiovascular issue or had something that said they really shouldn't be breathing this way, I think that holds them enough that they can get through it without injury, really.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that is a big deal. I have seen that more and more and I think that's the way we were created. I mean, that is part of what's been built into us as human beings, is that that we have this component that is, call it mind, call it soul, that is an integral part of our physiology and has some sort of effect. So, but and I think kind of what we've both been talking about is that is breath a connector then between the two?
I often call it the bridge between the physical and spiritual self. I do. I think it's the bridge. And I think most people would, like in a lot of different languages, they use the same word to mean breath and spirit. Mm-hmm. So I think there is something that comes out of more ancient tradition of this is how they were observing the breath originally, right? Or you talk about Qigong or Tai Chi, something that is a breath practice. Like they really get that it is the life force, or yoga in Ayurvedic medicine. Mm-hmm. This is your prana. This is your life force. You do not live. You don't exist in this physical form without your breath. Like this is a big deal, guys, right? Yeah. it's a big deal. So I do think, I do think it is that bridge. Again, you take your first breath when you come out of the womb, and you take that last breath when you transition into whatever's next. I mean, it is really the thing that creates this brief window of what we call life, right?
Yes.
And who knows what came before this physical existence, and who knows what's coming after, but the breath is what distinguishes this leg of the journey.
Yes, I like that. Yeah. And you talked about the words. I mean, in Hebrew, I think it's ruach is the word for spirit, and pneuma in the Greek.
Nice.
And I'm not sure the other languages, but those are the two I'm familiar with. That means spirit. I mean, that's
and breath probably.
And, yes. And breath. Yeah. It's wind or,
air.
But yeah, that's cool. So, how can people get in touch with you? What is the, I mean, and kind of give a little bit of a, how do you work with clients, and who would be good contact for you to be able to help?
Yep. So you can always find me on my website, which is Be Light with three T's. So BeLightTT.com. I have a bunch of freebies up there. I'm actually creating a new free master training right now that I hope to release in the next few weeks. I don't know when this podcast is going out, but maybe it will be up by the time it releases.
I don't have a backlog right now, so it's going to come up. It's going to come up pretty quickly. So.
That free training will be out in the next month. But otherwise, I have other freebies you can take advantage of. People can find me on Instagram at Tara B. Light. And then my YouTube channel, I have taken a break from posting, but there's still a lot of great information in the archives, and I will be returning to my YouTube channel later this year. So that is also Be Light TT. You can find all of my links on my Instagram page and on my website. I do work with people one-on-one, but very occasionally, and we have to be an excellent match. I don't just work with anyone. So if you're interested in that, just reach out to me and we can discuss it. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, I have an amazing 4-week breath boot camp, which is now automated but tied into my private community so that there's still a lot of touch points. You can still ask questions in real time. I also offer live classes through my community membership via Zoom. So it's really cool. And that breath boot camp takes you through everything you ever wanted to know about functional breathing from an intellectual standpoint and an experiential standpoint. So you really get the how, but more importantly, you get all the why. So you really understand what you're feeling in your body, why it's important, and how you can modulate your breath to really make an impact on your physiological state, your mental state, and your emotional state. So I've really built that program out to be exceptional at this point. There's so many cool bonuses and implementation libraries and all these fun things in there. So that's my biggest offering for people. I think it's the most valuable. You really get a lot out of it.
Yeah. And that's, you've been working on that for, well, since the last time we talked. I think you, when we last spoke, I think you were doing a lot of one-on-ones, and you've really put out a lot of, and you, and even at the, even then, I think you had a lot of things on YouTube that were people could access, but, yep. But you really have gotten a community of people together that really helping a lot of people. So.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. 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 Well, thank you. And you did say where we can find you. So, I forgot. I have not, it's been a while since I've recorded an episode. And so I have the bridge questions.
Who approacheth the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridgekeeper. I'm not afraid.
What is, I say, for your fitness, what is the piece of gear that is the most helpful for you? The piece of equipment that has been the most helpful thing for you?
Oh, my gosh. A physical equipment, you mean?
Physical equipment, yes. Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm not a gadget person. I know all you runners and endurance athletes love your bands and this, and you got the rings. Like, I'm not into any of it. I don't like gadgets. I've always been a big weightlifter. I'm a big kettlebell person. Mm-hmm. Recently, I've been working on my pull-ups again because I lost a lot of muscle mass the last few years. So I just got these full body bands, and I'm just loving the feeling of getting my pull-ups back. It feels so good to be strengthening myself again and really getting strong. So I don't have a great answer for you, but I would say my kettlebell and my full body band.
Okay. as runners who tend not to do a lot of upper body work, that's probably would not be a bad idea for you runners to check that out, because I know, you know, the idea of, you know, doing upper body work is like, it's my legs that do the work, right?
See, I'm the opposite. I've always loved upper body, and I get so bored working on my legs. But, you know, I was a dancer, so that was part of my sport. And then I would always do upper body in the gym more. Yeah.
Okay, second question is, what is the strangest thing that you've seen while working with clients? And what's the oddest kind of...
So in doing more of the spiritual work, I don't know if we talked about this last time, but I did have a client who had an entire conversation and closure with his wife who had passed about 15 years earlier. That was very cool. He had been holding this guilt for about 15 years, and we did this session. He sat up with his eyes closed, had a conversation with his dead wife, and came out of that session completely releasing the guilt he had been holding onto. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That is different. Yeah. So then you get the people who'd ask the follow-up question is, was it all internal for him, or was it something really there?
We'll never know.
You'll never know for sure. Yeah.
I mean, is anything really here? You know, we could argue that everything is a manifestation of our own perception. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Eric, you might be a manifestation of my own internal mind.
Yeah. Third question is, what is a word or phrase that gives a summary of your philosophy of life?
Oh my gosh. Eric, we need prep on these questions next time.
I want your initial reaction. I don't want you to.
Summarizes my philosophy of life. I'll just say the first word that comes to mind is integrity. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Oh. I know that I like to uphold. I like to be as transparent and honest and integrous with my audience and with my clients and with myself as possible. And I'm really someone who follows my word. So if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And I also like to admit when I don't know something. And I also like to correct myself if I learn something new and it is in direct conflict with something I was teaching earlier. And I really make an effort to correct that and get us all on the same page again. So I would say integrity is a big one for me.
I like that. And I think more people need that. There are a lot of people out there that are disingenuous.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to end the recording. So thank you a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you. This was so fun. Thanks for having me, Eric.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. I have my online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do not know somebody who might like it, take it just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next time.